This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today's podcast is, well, once again, we're going to talk about COVID-19, the coronavirus pandemic, from the perspective of someone whose nutritional perspective I really, really appreciate. And I've called upon him in times past to help us with various issues and the impact of nutritional supplements on various conditions, including GI health. He's author of a book entitled Functional Strategies for the Management of Gastrointestinal Disorders. That's part of his series called The Standard, which is the roadmap series of the Point Institute, which he heads. Recently, a few months back, we talked about immunity, and that was very apropos. In light of what's currently happening, he's written a wonderful monograph, Supporting Immune Function, A Lifestyle and Nutrition Approach, Principles and Protocols for Healthcare Professionals. That's a pretty sophisticated book, but it's very understandable for some of our more astute lay persons out there who listen to Intelligent Medicine, but also we have a lot of health practitioners who tune in. This podcast commemorates the second edition, which I'm holding in my hands, of a wonderful, wonderful compendium. I recommend it to all you health professionals listening to this and also my Intelligent Medicine listeners. Just out, the second edition, a new updated edition of Supplementing Dietary Nutrients, a Guide for Healthcare Professionals. It's a wonderful, wonderful atlas about nutritional supplements. It talks about all the alphabet nutrients and many of the nutraceuticals, and has some wonderful considerations about general principles of supplementation. So congratulations, Tom. Really, it's a wonderful – boy, you are super productive. I don't know how you do it, but you put together some wonderful information.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. And, it's great to be here with you again. Unfortunately, the circumstances are – quite different than the last time we spoke.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I invited you back on is because I'm pretty sure that in spite of the fact that you're doing a lot of writing about general topics in nutrition, I'm pretty sure you've done a deep dive in the past few weeks on the nutritional implications of COVID-19. And, we'll also note that you are Vice President of Scientific Affairs for Orthomolecular Products. That's one of my favorite companies that make a wide array of products and supplements for health professionals. Some of these are available over the counter, but they're really targeted to be physician quality products for health professionals to dispense to their patients. And so, in the midst of this pandemic, a lot of the things that you were talking about in terms of general immunity may be applicable to the coronavirus, but the coronavirus is separate and distinct and a brand new pathogen. So do you have any thoughts about the transferability of what we know about general immunity and protection against upper respiratory infections, cold and flus, and how much is applicable and how much may not be relevant? And maybe we need some more targeted approaches to coronavirus.
Well, I think the answer is a little of both. Clearly, we know that. Just looking at the statistics and looking at the evidence that's come out, not just in the United States but China and in Europe and elsewhere, there is what we call a vulnerable population. And why are they vulnerable? Well, because they're, you know, they have some either chronic diseases going on, which is depleting the immune system's ability to deal with this new novel virus. And so if you look at sort of the list of things, and obviously it's going to take a while to see more and more data of why certain people were more vulnerable than others, I think a lot of what we're going to find out is immune susceptibility. We obviously know people with, you know, known immune susceptibility problems are going to be more vulnerable, but I think, you know, looking back, we're going to find out that other people were more vulnerable than they thought. And much of that is going to be, at least if it's not nutrition based, it's going to be linked to specific nutrients. And, you know, people, I talk a lot about this idea of a buffering system or a reserve, a metabolic reserve. And this is not obviously the time to find out that your metabolic reserve for zinc or for, you know, the letter vitamins that you mentioned or other important nutrients that the immune system relies upon, or the lung tissue relies upon, it's not a good time to find out that you're low in those things. And so clearly people are responding, understanding that, you know, maybe under better circumstances, having a low buffer of those things, you know, you can get away with it. But when you have such an aggressive, novel new pathogen, you know, it takes advantage of those individuals that don't have the capacity to deal with it.
Well, you know, we're both to some extent locked down and trapped inside. But I have to say that I don't think I've ever been busier, because I'm spending a lot of time poring over reports and attending webinars and listening to experts talk about this. And one of the more interesting proposals that I've seen comes from a doctor who wrote in the British Medical Journal, I think it was a letter to the editor, which said a very important consideration might be, and this is just an example of, you know, how nutrition impacts this, would be to do a real comprehensive study of the vitamin D status of people who come down with more serious COVID-19 infections, and even do a post-mortem on people who've died. A lot of blood has been collected. That blood is often stored for research purposes. We're looking at all manner of immune parameters and, you know, various physiological parameters to see what the characteristics of the disease are. But wouldn't it be interesting to discover that people who are more susceptible to this, I mean, maybe some people get it, have very mild infections, maybe some are asymptomatic. Some people go on to require ventilators and even succumb to the infection, to correlate that with vitamin D status. And there's actually some hints in that direction. For example, in Minneapolis, there's evidence that the Somali population, which is known to be very low in vitamin D, perhaps because of skin coloration, you know, up there in a northern latitude, a much higher rate of infection than the general populace. And so African Americans, for example, more at risk. Well, there may be many reasons for that. Genetic reasons, there could be, you know, cultural and occupational hazards, stress levels, economic deprivation. But also it's known that the African American population, as a rule, because of darker skin, they may have lower levels of vitamin D. So should we be doing that with a wide array of nutrients?
Yeah, I think the you know, looking back and whether there's enough blood stored or whether there's enough data to be collected, I think we're going to find, you know, we know this is true of vitamin D, which, you know, it may be part of one of the many factors involved with the seasonality. You know, fewer people are getting sunlight for several months during, you know, the winter months, and putting, you know, we know from data that the vitamin D levels go down in across the globe almost for those seasons. And so is that part of the susceptibility of the immune system that allows even the influenza and other viruses, rhinoviruses, et cetera, to take over? And I think that's going to be certainly part of it. I mean, the level of vitamin D's effect on the immune system is almost universal. Almost every part of the immune system has a vitamin D receptor modulating enzymes or cytokines or other factors that are going on. So it's very important. But we could go down the list and we could say, okay, how about vitamin A levels in these individuals? How about even vitamin C levels in these individuals?
Zinc selenium, levels, you know, glutathione, you know, and on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, one of the interesting things that I've been thinking about, and I haven't really had time to dig into this part of it, but I have sort of this suspicion that, we know that obesity and diabetes seems to be a particular, predisposing condition for people not doing well with this, and, you know, other sort of chronic diseases that may be going on in individuals. And, you know, the immune system is just very, it's very interesting how the immune system has to kind of shift. And there is these ways of shifting the body from sort of more chronic disease versus more acute disease, or recognizing, you know, things going on wrong in a chronic inflammatory condition versus some novel new antigen that's come in. And it's possible that some of these people's immune system has sort of shifted or slanted to a chronic disease mode, which then doesn't allow them as quick a response to more of an acute disease mode. And so the larger the burden that we have sort of with obesity and chronic disease, and of course obesity is a chronic inflammatory condition that affects really all tissues. And of course diabetes is even that one step further as far as metabolic dysfunction, that the immune system has to constantly try to shift itself to deal with those issues, and parts of the immune system that are dealing with new incoming, antigens in this case, or you know, pathogens are not as well prepared. And so I think that we're going to see that's part of it, what's going on in this situation. Obviously there's other factors going on with, you know, a lot more immune suppressing agents in the environment, that are also probably there, potentially more in some communities than others. And so I think it's just going to be a list of things. But going back to this idea of, you know, creating a buffer, a nutrient buffer, an antioxidant buffer, you know, all of these different buffers that we have are going to give the immune system a leg up on and a reserve capacity to deal with something new. And some people just don't have that.
Is it simplistic to think that the immune system is analogous to a dimmer switch? You know, we have people who have low immunity. They're very susceptible. They get sick all the time. And then if you slide the dimmer switch up, you know, just like a light brightening in a room, that the immune system gets activated and perhaps hyperactivated, and then you've got an autoimmune disease. Is that how it works, or is there more nuanced, concept?
Yeah, there's quite a bit. Yeah, I would say there's quite a bit more nuance. You know, we're learning so much about, you know, when I went to school back in, you know, the 80s and 90s, you know, we thought we had the immune system figured out, the innate and adaptive immune system. They sort of do these separate things. And of course, now every year we're learning more and more about the, you know, how they interact with one another, the nuances, and that the innate immune system, which is typically the first to respond, and highly involved in the inflammatory response, which I wish we would call more the innate immune response, because inflammation is always viewed as negative. But if we don't have inflammation or we don't have that innate immune response, you know, we don't have any response. And so we're learning that there's a lot more nuance. And I would say that certainly you can upregulate or modulate the immune system to be more, to increase its surveillance of new things, without overactivating that system. And so it's I wouldn't say it's like a dimmer switch, but maybe portions of it could be like dimmer switches or whatever. You know, there's certain things that we can consume in our diet. You know, a lot of these are botanicals or even mushroom or yeast based things that kind of prime the immune system and get it maybe more, you can mature more cells so they're ready for the next response. And those kinds of things happen, but it's not an immune system out of control. It's a more trained immune system, a more ready immune system. And even if we think of antibodies and the traditional way we think of vaccinations, you know, once you're exposed to this virus or any virus and you mount a response, you now have memory cells that have been selected out from, you know, the millions and millions of cells that you have, B and T cells, and now they have a much more ready response to produce not only antibodies that are circulating, but even new antibodies a lot faster. So the immune system has all kinds of levels of way of dealing with new things and repeated things. And that's what makes it really so interesting and at the same time so complex to deal with.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line, available at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out, which help support positive mood and relaxation. GABA, 5-HTP, SAMe, L-tryptophan, and Mucuna extract. With current economic and living conditions causing widespread sadness and tension, these neurotransmitters and their precursors can help support positive mood and relaxation. That's according to numerous clinical studies. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And I know that's important during this coronavirus pandemic. And now back to our guest, Thomas Gwilliams. Is it appropriate to think of this disease, as some people have, as multiphasic? I mean, there's an element where we may, you know, as well people want to support our immune system in a certain way so we're less vulnerable to infection. And then if we get sick, maybe there's a time to hold and a time to fold with certain nutrients that we were taking to prevent the disease. But if we go into that spiral of cytokine storm where, you know, the immune system gets hyperactivated, maybe we want to eschew certain nutrients, emphasize others, perhaps some anti-inflammatories. In fact, there's some really interesting feedback from people who are on the front lines in the ICUs who are saying that even high-dose steroids and some of these powerful immune suppressant drugs, drugs used for rheumatoid arthritis, for example, are proving useful in helping patients survive. And then a fourth phase might be, and this is going to become important because a lot of people have been infected and have recovered. They've had maybe stormy courses of disease, and they're just not feeling right weeks and months afterwards. Maybe they need a different type of immune support or restoration treatment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, like you, I've been involved in talking with lots of people. I've been involved in a task force on trying to figure some of these things out. And there's so many questions flying around and so many speculations at the same time. Mm-hmm. Let me deal with that first one. There's a lot of botanicals. I just mentioned yeast
prevention.
And mushroom beta.
We're talking
glucans.
Prevention, you know, just for a healthy person to maybe as a bulwark against getting sick. Right.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is the question about, is there a time to take something as a preventative and then to stop taking it because it could create sort of an upregulation? And some of the ones that have been, pointed out as potential problematic would be things like elderberry or beta glucans or even echinacea or some of these things. Mm-hmm. And I think the data, there's no data to suggest that the ones I just mentioned and perhaps any that I've heard of that are botanical immunomodulators or even some people view these as immunostimulants, that any of these then could upregulate the immune system into some uncontrolled cytokine storm.
It's based on rather thin evidence, right?
So for instance, let's take elderberry, which is one that's been in the news and people have cautioned against it. There's a single paper that was published out of Israel in the 90s that when they took blood cells out of individuals, put them in petri dishes, and then put a product, an elderberry syrup, on them, it caused, an upregulation of IL-1 beta and IL-6 and TNF-alpha, which are some classic biomarkers. And so it's very artificial to imagine a syrup, which actually has elderberry and other things in it, to be, have direct access to your immune cells in a petri dish. Ironically, those same individuals repeated that study a few years later, actually published 1 year later, and found that they saw no increase in any of those cytokines like they saw the first time. But more importantly, I actually looked up all the papers I could find where somebody took elderberry orally, or even animal where they took it orally and measured cytokines. And in all the oral studies, all the cytokines measured either stayed the same or went down. So this is why we need to be very careful. A lot of the caution that comes from some obscure, usually an in vitro paper.
Test tube study.
And test tube studies. And when immune cells are, you can put a lot of things on immune cells and they will do various things. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that, you know, at a local level, some of these immune modulating agents do, you know, trigger or begin the innate immune response, which is what we'd want. And some of that would be triggered with the traditional inflammatory cytokines. But from a global perspective and the way that the body would, you know, function, that these often would actually act as anti-inflammatories, and as ironic as that is. So you can stimulate the inflammation at one end, but still be an overall anti-inflammatory environment.
So that's a balancing effect. That's sort of an adaptogenic response. In other words, when something is too low, it brings it into normal range, but it also may put the brakes on something that's going too high. We tend to think of things in sort of a pharmaceutical model, but many of these natural substances have so many different constituents and a multiplicity of modes of action.
Yes, and I just think that, you know, you know, and the fact that none of these ingredients have ever been associated with, you know, a cytokine storm, you know, in the millions and millions of people that have taken mm-hmm. worldwide. So, yeah. I mean, even people have, you know, recommended against vitamin D in that context, because, you know, some paper shows that it upregulates, you know, IL-1 beta or whatever. So I think these are over the top precautionary. And actually, I think, in most cases, I would say if somebody is taking these and they're fine with them as a preventative, if they became positive, even with symptoms, I wouldn't think that a clinician would want to change what they're doing. Obviously, if somebody is in the emergency room and they're going through, you know, an emergency response to COVID-19, you know, this isn't the time to make sure you need to take your elderberry along or your vitamin D along. At that point, any benefit you're likely getting from that is done.
Trivial.
And
yeah.
it's, mm-hmm. I don't think it had any contributory, aspects to the acute nature of it, but mm-hmm. it's certainly not going to pull the person out of that either.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, clearly then we enter the realm of, you know, heroic resuscitation efforts with drugs and, you know, all the various types of support they offer with oxygen and ventilators and so on. Let's begin to explore some of the things that people might plausibly consider as part of an armamentarium against infections in general.
So I think you're talking about products or lifestyle, or what do you, want to talk about first?
Certainly we can touch upon lifestyle. I think people want news they can use. I think a lot of people who listen to Intelligent Medicine have sort of signed on to the proposition that they get, you know, adequate sleep and, you know, good diet, and, you know, stress optimization and so on. But, you know, let's certainly, there's a lot to be said about that. And, you know, you've written about it in your extensive discussion in supporting immune function, a lifestyle and nutrient approach, because, you know, lifestyle is something that I think you talk about.
Right. So I think there, you know, if you're talking about sleep, you know, I think sleep, stress management, you know, the dietary principles, I think you probably covered a lot of those. If we're looking at specific nutrients that people want to ensure that are, like, on board appropriately, you know, this is obviously a time when a multivitamin, sort of a standard multivitamin, especially hopefully a good, you know, standard multivitamin would be on board. And so you're going to cover sort of as many bases as possible with the micronutrient aspect of it. you know, I think vitamin C, clearly people could be, you know, increasing their level of vitamin C during these time periods. I've heard a lot of clinicians, you know, recommending, you know, at least a gram sometimes. Obviously it's way above the RDA, but, most people can tolerate that without any problem. Vitamin D levels, if you haven't had your vitamin D levels tested, obviously, maybe this is not the time you're going to be able to go in and do that. So if you're inside, you've been inside all winter, now you're not even getting outside because, you know, in some cases they're not even letting people, you know, walk the dog anymore. You're going to be inside quite a bit. And so, you know, clearly you're going to be talking about taking, several thousand IUs, of vitamin D. And it's even as high as 5,000 a day, it would not be inappropriate for people who have been inside all winter. And I mean, some clinicians even would recommend more. I don't know if you have a specific opinion on the dose, how high you would recommend the dose on that.
I think 5,000 is a safe and reasonable dose for most people to take, you know, at least until, you know, the lockdown is lifted and, you know, we can get our levels checked. I find very few of my patients go above the threshold of toxicity when they do that on a regular basis. You know, perhaps 10,000 might be much. There's some suggestion when people catch the flu that they kind of, you know, take a little more, you know, that they might take for a few days.
Right. If they've
not been taking vitamin D, maybe amp up and take 50,000 for a couple of
right.
days just to, you know, kind of fill up their tank a little bit.
Yeah, so I think vitamin D, and again, these aren't therapies specifically for COVID-19, but these are going to boost the immune system. And vitamin A, this is one that, you know, is a little tricky for some people because, you know, they're concerned about vitamin A toxicity. That can happen, but it really requires a high dose of vitamin A for a relatively long period of time. So there's two forms of vitamin A, beta carotene and what we call preformed vitamin A, which is retinol. And, you know, I feel comfortable recommending, you know, and the research suggests that you can take 10,000, even perhaps up to 25,000 international units of vitamin A, you know, for several months, without any issue, without any toxicity issues.
With some caution.
That's,
you know,
pregnancy. That would, right.
Or liver disease, perhaps, or, you know, something
right.
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but in those situations, you can go down a little lower with beta carotene.
Right. Let's hold our fire for a moment because we're going to go through a catalog of, nutrients and their plausibility, for this. I'm talking, to Thomas Williams. He's a PhD, and he's Vice President of Scientific Affairs for Orthomolecular Products, also author of a wonderful series of monographs called The Standard, which is from the Point Institute. You want to give people a heads up to the Point Institute? Is that a place where people can order the book?
Yeah, they can order it if they just put in their browser Point Institute or pointinstitute.org. They can get all the books there.
Yeah, wonderful additions to your library if you want a comprehensive library on, you know, nutritional topics. And by the way, the book is beautiful because, you know, there's a lot of fine print there, but there's some, man, there's some wonderful, wonderful diagrams, and it makes it really easy to understand some of these complex biochemical pathways. I know you were majored in molecular immunology. I wish I paid more attention in medical school because now I got to catch up all by reading your monographs. All right. We'll be back with more on the subject of nutritional support for coronavirus prevention and potentially for ameliorating its consequences. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.